KCB Radio is brought to you by the American Council of the Blind. If you would like more information about the council, visit their website at www.acb.org. That's www.acb.org. ACB, the people that bring you ACB Radio.
For the latest breaking news stories, visit the ACB Radio newsroom at www.acbradio.org. All the news, all the time. From the world's leading news organizations like CNN, the BBC, the New York Times, the Toronto Star, the Wall Street Journal, and more. That's all the news, all the time, in the ACB Radio newsroom at www.acbradio.org.
The ACB Radio Interactive Broadcasters Web Radio.
Memories of a great decade.
The 1970s.
What was so special about the 70s anyway? Find out on Roger Cool's homepage.
Well, if you visited my website, good on you.
Search Jeff's library to see why the Jamboree really does have more variety. Meet Mr. Vocoder himself, Kelly Josipurger.
ACB, you're on.
Learn more about KJS Productions, who make many of our jingles. Read Nikki Keck's heartwarming story about how she turned a childhood dream into reality. So, for these websites and more, visit the ACB Radio Interactive Broadcasters Web Ring. At interactive.acbradio.org.
Programming on ACB Radio is made possible in part through financial support from the Verizon Corporation. Verizon, a proud supporter of ACB Radio.
Welcome to Blind Line, the original interactive talk show exclusively for the blind and vision impaired. I'm Jonathan Mosen. It's nice to have you with us on what is a very nice sunny summer day where I am. Hope wherever you are, it's just as nice. On the program today, we're going to be talking about what is going on at the Iowa Department for the Blind, and then, in general terms, the whole issue of whether it's appropriate for guide dog handlers to be asked to leave their guide dogs at home when they're going to a rehab center. Does it matter what course you're taking, and are there certain courses where it is appropriate for you to be expected to develop excellent cane skills, and therefore it's not appropriate to have the dog there? Or are we, in fact, in making those kinds of decisions, re-limiting people's freedom to choose their own mobility method? We'll be exploring all of these issues, and we have some interesting guests to do that, and we'll be taking your calls as well. My guests are Debbie Grubb, who's the president of GDUI. That's the guide dog affiliate of the American Council of the Blind. We also have Sheila Styron, who's their PR person, and also Stephanie Bowman, whose story we'll hear in just a moment. So welcome to all of you. I appreciate you giving up your Sunday afternoons to be with us.
Thank you. It's our pleasure.
Yeah, my pleasure too.
Wonderful. Stephanie, let's start with the story that really has caused, this rumpus, this filing of a formal complaint. Let's go back to the course that you sought to do. Can you tell us a bit about what that course is and how you went about applying for it?
Well, it's going to take computer, because I really didn't get a lot when I was there, and I was also going to take my skills on my Braille too, as well.
And so it was exclusively computer related, right?
Well, mostly, yes. And may I say something first?
Sure.
Well, one of the reasons why I was going back in was because I was not getting, I was homeschooled. But it was like once a month, and I was hardly ever being sought. You know, they would come over or help me because they didn't have the people to start with or the funds. And a friend of mine, Marianne, and I helped blind school, just voluntary, and went to the nursing homes and helped this lady get around and teach her cane travel because they didn't have enough people. This is one of the reasons why I was going back in.
And Stephanie, isn't it accurate to say that you were at the school receiving orientation training from September through January of 2000, and then you left, and then were out for about a year, and at the same time got your guide dog, and then your rehab person recommended that you go back into
my counselor, yes, ma'am.
Yes, your orientation, your counselor recommended that you go back into the orientation program.
Yes, because she thought that it would help me, and I wasn't getting training, especially in Braille or computer, and I said that I thought that was very necessary for me, and it could help me get more into the work skills with the computer.
So was there any kind of orientation or mobility component to the training that you were going back to the department for?
What do you mean?
Well, would you be doing O&M? Would you be doing long cane skills as part of the training that you were going back for in June?
They wanted, I think they, I'll be honest with you, they're always going to push that on you. But I tried to avoid that issue because she asked me about my dog, too, and I said that it was like, when I went in there and told him, I said that I thought that that was against the law when he talked to me.
Okay, because why I ask that question is because I suppose it's important to establish the parameters of the argument. If it's just that guide dog users are disallowed from taking their dogs in any instance to the department, that's one matter. And then I suppose the other would be if it was going to be that you were going to be given some long cane instruction as part of why you were going back, that that's a separate argument about whether it's appropriate for a guide dog to be withheld in that instance.
Yes,
Jonathan, I think one thing to remember is that although this orientation program does teach the long white cane, there are several other courses that are being taught within that program that would not be impacted by having a guide dog, and Stephanie wanted to be involved in the entire spectrum, and they were saying that she had to leave her guide dog at home or kennel her guide dog, whether it was Braille or computer training or home ec skills or whatever it was, and that's where the rub is. If this program only taught orientation with the long white cane, if that was the primary purpose of the program, then we could say that bringing in a guide dog would definitely impact the basic scope of the program, which is their ADA argument. But since they teach other skills, then this cannot be an argument that they use, because a guide, it doesn't make any difference whether you use a guide dog or a cane if you're reading Braille or taking computer training or in the kitchen learning to peel potatoes. The other thing that we tried to make clear to the Iowa Department for the Blind was that if there are outcomes that their cane users must have, for example, crossing busy streets, or they made a point of saying, we purposely close our cafeteria for dinner every evening so that our students will be forced to go out and get dinner on their own at a local restaurant. And we're saying, well, the guide dog users should be held accountable to doing the very same thing. If you have to, you know, at a certain time in your training, if it comes time to cross a busy street, then you do it whether you use the cane or the dog. And if you're going to the cafeteria for dinner, you do the same thing. The other point that's important to note is that when Stephanie was in the program from September through January of 2001, she had training with a long white cane. She was accepted by a reputable guide dog school, was graduated. Reputable guide dog schools do not send people home who are not capable of traveling independently with their dogs. And so she had had training with a long white cane and had been graduated by a reputable school and was accepted into that rehab program. Obviously, her counselor felt that there were certain aspects of that program that Stephanie still needed in order to deal with certain aspects of her blindness, and so she was accepted into that program, and the only reason she was forced out of it was because of her dog, and that's where GVUI is involved, and that's where the rub is.
Okay, I don't want to belabor the point, but when I got the media release last week, it seemed pretty clear that when Stephanie was turned down from this course, it was a computer course, as the media release puts it. Now, based on what you're saying, that doesn't appear to be strictly correct.
It's my understanding that when Stephanie returned to...
Can I say something?
Certainly.
Please.
I'd like to interrupt. But they also said that it was just... What we talked about, there was Sandy tickets. And she's the head of the school, and Mary, Criswell, Brenda Criswell, which is, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't say there. Well, okay, these two people and I had a phone call message, the three of us, and we were talking. And she said that we talked about what we would do, and she said that it wasn't wrote in stone when I go in there what I had to do. We were just going to, what I really needed to work on most was my computer and my Braille. And then they also brought up the fact that I could be in this one job program, too. This is what we were working for. So this is basically what it was.
Okay.
We talked about these three things that was the most important.
I also would like to clarify that when you go into guide dog school, you have to be already skilled and travel with a long white cane. Stephanie had completed that coursework previous to being accepted at the guide dog school.
Right. Okay. So can you take us...
There's no need for any discussion of long white cane travel to ensue upon her second reentry into the program.
Actually, I think it's... If I could say this, this is probably just only my opinion, but I think it's unfair to keep dogs and canes away from each other. There are two alternative techniques in seeing, and I mean getting around when you can't see. And I think it is, it's like what it does is it segregates each other from each other. And I am telling you, when I was there, I heard hardly anything about dogs at all. And I think that's wrong. I do. If there are two techniques that work, why shouldn't they be out there for everybody by choice, especially in a federal and a state place?
Just before we go on, can you then, Stephanie, talk us through June the 5th, when all of this really hit the fan, as it were? What happened on that day, and how were you treated?
Well, actually, it was rude. Rude because I think that they weren't ready for me to stand my course, because I was going to stand up to this because I thought it was wrong. I think that they have one way of thinking and they just don't want to change it. It's just one way, and you cannot do that. All people are different, and we will become blind. If I become blind, I'll become blind. I'll be a different blind person than Debbie is. Or the person down the street that is blind, I'm going to be different. And they need to put that in their program. They can't just try to teach one way of thinking.
So ultimately...
And that's what it was. That was our discussion. That if I had my guide dog in that training center, that I wouldn't know what it was to be blind seeing through an eyes of a dog. And to me, I thought that was totally ridiculous because I'm my own person. And I can make choices for myself. I have been doing this for 44 years. They can give me the alternative technique to do so, but they can't tell me how to do it.
And ultimately, that discussion took place with Mr. Alan Harris, did it? The director.
And the head of the teaching center. And which is Sandy, and also David Hulge was there too, and this is all in my civil rights report.
Jonathan,
Did you not go on the 5th, Stephanie, and were you not told
okay,
that
the fifth,
you couldn't?
No, hang on. The 5th is when I went in and I talked to Sandy and told her that I had talked to my school, that I had my dog, and I didn't think or feel that it was right. I was not going to keep her home. Because not only if I had to come up with money, that would be breaking the law because of 216, the state law especially, 216C, it says that nobody has the right to interfere with us, our training.
And at that time, didn't they tell you that you couldn't bring your dog, Stephanie? They literally refused you.
No, what happened was, let me say just how it happened. The 5th was the day that I talked to Sandy, and she said to come back the 6th. At 8:30, the 6th of June, I had a meeting with these three people, and Alan Harris was one of them. And that's when the first thing that when I came in the door, he said to me that he wished that I would have came to him before I called the ADA police. And that's what started it.
All right. And so, basically, they said to you, if you don't leave the dog at home, you can't have the training.
Yes. they don't want the dog in the orientation
right.
center. But what they're not telling you is when I was in the orientation center, when I took Caring Travel, I went everywhere. Everywhere but the business part of it and your, like, your where Alan Harris's room is now and stuff, the offices. So really, where could you bring a dog where you weren't taking Cane Travel? And I've never, and I'll be straight up, and I know there's a lot of other people out there that went to the school. I was never offered the third floor, like they're saying, an outside, the computer course on third level where they say dogs are. Because I was never offered that. And then it was changed, what I was offered when they, this is hearsay probably because it was on the radio or on the TV, but they said that they would send dogs to other places, make other arrangements for them, for the dog users.
Okay.
And of course, that's in totally some Channel Fox 17 news reports that some of us have seen, is a representative from the Iowa Department for the Blind who states outright during the interview that it's very important part of their policy to keep guide dogs out of the program because they don't, in fact, want the students in the program to even think about the possibility that they may someday want to get a guide dog, as it will interfere with their entire attitude and philosophy in terms of how they approach their training with the long white cane.
Yes.
So, Sheila or Debbie, can you tell us how GDUI became involved and what you're doing about the situation?
GDUI, this is Debbie. GDUI became involved because Stephanie, among the many phone calls that she made seeking help for this problem, called the American Council of the Blind and spoke with Penny Reeder, editor of the Braille Forum, and Charlie Crawford, of course, who is the executive director of the American Council of the Blind. And because we are the special interest affiliate for guide dog users, Charlie called me and said that there was this person who had been definitely discriminated against. And this case is very important, Jonathan, because we know that this kind of discrimination is going on in other states across the country, Texas, Maryland, Louisiana, just to name a few. And we know that because we've heard about it. But you're dealing with a lot of people who are newly blind, who are easily intimidated, and these people will not step forward and say, I have been discriminated against. We just talked with Dr. Ed Bradley, who is from Texas, who is a member of the ACB board, and he verified the fact that in Texas they know this discrimination is taking place, and yet they can find no one against whom the discrimination has been made who will stand up and take notice. And it's very important to understand that when you file a complaint with the Department of Justice, there has to actually be a person like a Stephanie Doman who has been discriminated against. And so when GDUI and ACB heard about Stephanie and heard that she was standing up and being counted and saying, yes, I have been discriminated against, this case took on significance because, number one, it's Stephanie, and when one person's civil rights are violated, it's a short step to when the civil rights of other people are violated. And so we would have done this for any guide dog user, but this case took on added significance in that we were looking for someone who would stand up and who would allow us to take that case to the Department of Justice. We meaning GDUI and ACB, began to work on the complaint and began to be in contact with Stephanie to learn more about her situation. And we had some differences with the Iowa affiliate, who believes that their program is as it should be and best meets the needs of guide dog users. And Chris Gray, and who is the president of ACB, and Melanie Brunson, who is the ACB attorney, an ACB attorney, who is the director of advocacy and governmental affairs, and I went to Iowa in an effort to talk the situation out. And the ACB, in its wisdom, decided that it would be better to allow GDUI to take the lead on this case, because the Iowa Council of the United Blind felt so strongly about it. However, ACB has given GDUI invaluable support in helping us draft the complaint, in helping us get the complaint to the Department of Justice, come up with the necessary supporting documentation. And so GDUI is pleased and proud to stand with Stephanie, who has definitely been discriminated against. The Iowa Department for the Blind and the rehab centers that spout this philosophy have put in a built-in bias against guide dog use at a time when people are the most vulnerable. And so when they hear, "You only can understand blindness to your soul if you use the long white cane," and "Walking with a guide dog is like walking with a sighted guide, and it's depending on that sight," many of these people will always be prejudiced against having a guide dog. And we, it's very important to understand, GDUI, we do not have anything against any cane user. Most of us don't believe that dogs are for everybody, if you're not a dog person, that kind of thing. But what we're saying is the law says that these two mobility aids hold equal standing. And what we believe is that, that these rehab centers should present both options to guide dogs to potential clients. They should hear about both options. Their orientation and mobility instructors should be schooled in working with someone, whether they choose the long white cane or whether they choose a dog after they've had appropriate training. And that's what we're fighting for. The ADA is being violated here, and Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act is being violated here.
Okay, so are you saying that the Iowa Council disagrees with you and is actually supporting the position that the department has taken on Stephanie's case?
Yes. That's one of the great things, I guess, about ACB, and sometimes it can drive you crazy, but it's one of the things that makes ACB the organization it is.
Okay, but
the Council of the United Blind does support the position of the Iowa Department for the Blind.
On what grounds are they supporting it?
They believe, what they're saying is they truly believe that a blind person understands blindness. They believe the rhetoric of that program, that a person understands blindness to their souls only via use of the long white cane. When I went to the meeting in Iowa, after we had the formal meeting, there was a social time with punch and cookies and talk, and I, along with Chris and Melanie, went around and met people and mingled. And what I learned was people were astounded that ACB and GDUI were so upset about this, because they said, "We love guide dog users. We have no problem with guide dog users, and guide dog users are welcome in our department. They're just not welcome into the orientation program." But what they refuse to understand is that the orientation program teaches other skills other than the long white cane. And a person who chooses a guide dog, who makes an informed choice, and who completes a program under the law, must be given entree into that program. And another reason, Jonathan, that this case is so vitally important is that Joanne Wilson, who is the director of the Rehab Services Administration, believes right down the line this philosophy. And when we talk about choice, consumer choice, which is what the ADA is about, what Section 504 is about, when we talk about consumer choice, Joanne Wilson says, well, what consumer choice is that you look into the rules of a program before you enter it, and if they tell you they won't accept a guide dog, then you have the choice of going someplace else.
No, you don't.
That's not what, in the state of Iowa, you don't. Well, that's not what choice is all about. Plus, ACB adopted something called the 13 Principles. And again, the foundation of those principles is consumer choice. So GDUI differs profoundly with the Iowa Council of the United Blind and on this issue. But in a sense of compromise, what has happened is that ACB is assisting us but did not sign on to the complaint. And in every compromise, that means that no one is particularly happy, but everybody gets something.
Right, so if you've got a special interest affiliate taking one position and the people on the ground, the state affiliate, taking another, it must place the national arm of ACB in one heck of an invidious position.
It does, and a lot of effort was made. That's why the three of us went to Iowa to have that meeting, and we were not able to change anyone's mind. And this was the decision that the ACB board made, that ACB would assist GDUI, and they are, and we are very grateful for that assistance, but that they would not sign on to the complaint along with the four guide dog schools that signed on and along with GDUI. Since the complaint has been filed, five other guide dog schools have agreed to actively support the complaint with the Department of Justice. And so out of the 14 or so schools that there are in this country, nine schools have signed on, because this really strikes at the heart of the guide dog movement and of freedom of choice and of putting in a built-in bias against the guide dog at a time when these people are the most vulnerable.
And that was actually what they eventually said to Stephanie, wasn't it? That if she didn't like it, she could go to another state and get rehab from there, even though it was so easy for her to actually get to the local rehab program.
That's correct. Is it not, Stephanie?
Were they going to send me?
Yeah, they actually said that you would have to go to another state if you wanted to take your
there
dog.
There wasn't any guide dog schools here, and they were thinking like I needed help with Lily, but I don't. I need no help with her whatsoever.
Well,
I needed help with computer training. What
Jonathan was trying to ask you, Stephanie, was when they refused you training at the Iowa Department for the Blind, they said that they would send you to another state for training. Is that correct?
Or somewhere else, basically. But I don't understand how they could do that. How could they have the funding to do that?
Right. And it's a convenience thing, I suppose. I mean, if you just...
Can I say something?
Yeah, sure.
First of all, our state of Iowa, the Blind Center has the basically what they call the... Patton or they get all the blind people that have visually impaired, and you don't have the choice to go to Voc Rehab in our state. They have the monopoly over it. So really, if you have visually impaired, that's basically the place you get to go.
All right, let me just say, if you'd like to give us a call on this issue, you're welcome to do that. The number is area code 212-812-2800. That's in the United States, and you should see that in the title bar of most of your media players. That's area code 212-812-2800. And then when you're asked for a conference code, courtesy of spiderphone.com, who make all this possible, then you should enter 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512. If you have any comments to make or questions you'd like to ask of our guests, I should also say that we have invited Alan Harris to be on the program. We haven't received a reply to that email. I suppose it is possible he may have gone on an extended Thanksgiving vacation perhaps and didn't pick up the email, but whatever the reason, we don't have him on the program despite an invitation. I'd like to talk now about the standard level of competence that one really requires before one gets a guide dog. Do you think that really the tests are adequate from guide dog schools? And I presume they vary quite a bit from school to school in terms of just how competent you are as a cane user before you're allowed access to a guide dog, and indeed whether that's actually important or not.
I have attended two guide dog schools, and I think we'll let Stephanie and Sheila speak to this as well. And both of my guide dog, both of my experiences, I had to prove that I could do certain things before I was released with my guide dog. My first school, I actually stayed on campus and actually did a solo route and had to prove that I could do certain things before I was graduated. And there were a couple of people that were in school at the same time that I was who were not able to complete the program and who were kindly and gently but most definitely sent home. My second guide dog, I took home training, And again, I had to do solo routes by myself, showing the trainer that I could do certain things. And while I was receiving home training, until she released me, I could not go anywhere on my own with my new guide dog. And once she was certain that I had met the requirements of being able to travel independently, she released me. So my experiences have been that there is a definite list of criteria that you must meet in order to be released with a guide dog to travel independently. It would be very bad PR, very bad business for guide dog schools to send home a bunch of people who didn't know what it was they were doing.
So,
and at the front end of guide dog school as well, there are requirements for getting into that school.
Mm-hmm.
You are assessed on your ability to travel, to use a long white cane, to walk in routes around your neighborhood, to problem solve, to demonstrate your abilities in these areas. So even before you get into guide dog school, you do have to demonstrate a certain proficiency, because unlike some may have you believe, a guide dog is not a sighted guide. A guide dog is a wonderful mobility tool with eyes and a brain that can help you think and problem solve and work as a team. But the guide dog is not the one who directs your course. Somebody who is not well versed in their own personal orientation and mobility skills cannot just pick up a dog's harness and say to the drugstore, Fido. It doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
A guide dog simply enhances your ability to travel gracefully, gives you an added feature of safety with its pair of eyes and with its brain helping you navigate your courses. And I would also like to add that when a person is at the point of deciding whether to get a guide dog or to train with a long white cane, and is it possibly a place in their life where they have recently lost their sight, or they're, say, a young person growing up facing a lot of really complicated decisions, and the guide dog has been proven to be such a workable, safe, enjoyable way for some blind people to travel, should they choose to do so, that to not even offer blind people an opportunity to learn about guide dogs is fairly unconscionable. But to actually have entities who are the largest ones in the country, the ones who are financed by government, in some states, as in Iowa, the only choice for blind people to attend, to receive O&M skills, plus all of the other skills they need to regain or build skills to cope with their new lives as blind people, that it's absolutely beyond unconscionable that the whole idea of guide dogs is not only disembraced but denigrated.
I suppose they may argue that the reason for the popularity of guide dogs is possibly that people haven't had access to cane instruction of a sufficiently high quality.
That's an interesting one, Jonathan. But in point of fact, most blind people in the United States are given some sort of early introduction to cane travel, and most professions in the blindness field do introduce cane travel, but very rarely is there any outreach from the guide dog schools. They're trying harder now, but for instance, I, as a child growing up, I knew, because I was a dog person at heart and because I had read a lot of wonderful books about seeing eye dogs and guide dogs, that the minute I was old enough to do so, I was going to go train with a guide dog. But I never even met a guide dog growing up, and I certainly never had a professional in the blindness field or a professional orientation and mobility instructor say, you know what, Sheila, you know, you might consider getting a guide dog. This is how they work. Here's one. Try it out.
No,
there are lots of opportunities for children to be introduced to the long white cane, but they're not introduced to guide dogs. So anyone who gets a guide dog is somebody who gets one because they really, really want one. It's nothing that is sort of presented to them in the course of their blindness education.
All right, we've got a call. I'll just take that so we can reduce long-distance charges for this person, and we're going to Watertown, Massachusetts. Hello.
Hi, this is Brian Charlton calling. How are you folks doing this afternoon?
Hi, Brian.
Hi, Brian.
Nice to meet you.
As a guide dog user myself, as a member of the ACB Board of Directors, I wanted to chime in on this subject, if I may. A couple of different things. First off, I think it's important for the listeners to understand that while there was a meeting called of the ACB Board of Directors, it didn't meet the constitutional requirements as to the number of days between the announcement of the meeting and when the meeting was held. And therefore, when the board voted, they voted strictly as a matter of giving the impression of the board without it being a binding vote on the part of the board.
Now, the board took that vote in the full knowledge that that was the case, did they?
They did indeed.
All right.
That this was strictly advisory. The board did not have the authority to make the decision because it didn't meet the statutory requirements in terms of notification of the meeting and those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
The board did vote to advise, though it won't show on any record in as much as it wasn't an official meeting, to advise the powers that be, in this particular case, whether that would be the president or exactly which body would make that decision, the executive committee, etc., wasn't clear at the time, but it was clearly the intent of the board to indicate that they didn't want ACB to sign on to this for a variety of different reasons. I'm proud to say I was one of those who voted in favor of engaging and becoming a party to this suit. A couple of things that I think the listeners need to understand, and I wanted to ask a couple of questions here. This is the first time I've had a chance to speak to the lady behind it all. Is a couple of things. First off, it's my understanding that the Iowa agency made it very clear to you at the time that you attempted to enter the program that you as a guide dog user would have to make outside arrangements for the care of your dog because your dog would not be welcome there at the agency. And that they in themselves would not provide any kind of kenneling opportunities. That was the initial understanding. Question is that true, yes or no?
Did they ask me if I would put up my dog?
No, did they offer to kennel your dog?
Oh, heavens, no.
Thank you. Okay, so they said basically you'll need to go home and make some arrangements for your dog to be kenneled in order to participate in this program.
Did they ask me that?
Yes.
Yes, they did.
Okay.
The next one
that I find interesting is, it is my understanding that in your conversations with your rehab counselor the powers that be at the orientation center, that you were not going to be required to participate in all aspects of the program, but rather were going to be able to participate in part of the program, specifically computer training, braille training, and perhaps some vocational training, if you will. Is that a fair description?
So, I'm sorry, sir, would you repeat that?
They offered to let you take not the whole program, but to take parts of the program, specifically computer training, braille training, and vocational-oriented training, job training.
Yes, we talked about this.
And they agreed to that.
Yes, well, you know what? I have a paper that says that.
Very good. And I understand this to be so, but I've never got a chance to make sure that my understanding was the one that actually took place.
They said that they would. It was workable. That is exact words.
Okay, workable. It was workable. So they were willing to take, if you will, an a la carte approach toward the program, meaning you could take parts of it and not all of it.
What I needed was what we were going to do.
Yes, so the answer is yes. I understand.
Yes.
So the other thing I find interesting, Jonathan, is having been quoted and misquoted in the media about 1,001 times, I'm not at all surprised to find that Stephanie was intending to participate in more than just computer training.
Oh, okay. Well, I was quoting from the media release issued by GDUI.
Released by
GDUI. But I don't think they ever put what you really say all the time. I
think that happens to some degree. And I agree, Jonathan, that it was a GDUI press release. But I'm not, again, not at all surprised that it didn't list all of the particulars associated with things. I know that the media that I heard dealt specifically with computer training, and occasionally it would slip in there some Braille training, but it didn't talk about any vocational-oriented training in that scenario.
Now, your question, Brian, and its response has me confused now, because if the department said that Stephanie could indeed take an a la carte approach and do the non-orientation and mobility components with the dog, then what's the nature of the problem? Because she didn't want any...
The dog would
not
be able to take it.
Minus the dog. No orientation.
They might have said that there was some place that you could go with a dog, but I have never heard of it.
Okay.
And being a student there, the only dog that I have ever seen was one lady that works up in the library, and she comes up in the daytime. We see her maybe once or twice, and most of the time we were in sleep shades. The only reason why I seen her is when she was going in because I lived there. And so I was out earlier than most people when they came in.
So,
and I
again,
haven't seen a lot of dogs. Like they say that there's lots of dogs around there. I've never seen them.
Right, Stephanie, as I understand it, you were offered the opportunity to come and take part of the program, but you were not offered to take that part of the program with your dog, only to take part in that program without
the
your
king.
Dog.
Okay, that's clear then, right.
So to me... There's a couple of things that concern me, and one of them is within the ACB family, this business of having two of our affiliates taking different opinions or different approaches toward a topic, and under what circumstances would the organization support the opinion or concerns of one affiliate in such a differing of opinion. I think that there always needs to be some room for compromise. I'm a little disheartened, to be honest with you, that this particular compromise took place for a couple of reasons. One is that there was an ACB resolution passed in the late 70s that clearly stated that it was the opinion of the American Council of Blind members that an orientation center for the blind ought to take the approach, and in this particular case it was calling upon the Affiliated Leadership League of and for the Blind to assure that its membership took this approach, that guide dogs, the use of a guide dog as a mobility aid is of equal value to that of using the long white cane, and that any policy or process that would state otherwise ought to be revoked. We have that on the books as an ACB resolution. We're supposed to be guided by ACB resolutions between conventions. The board is not to take any action. The president is not to take any action that is in direct conflict with any resolution passed by the membership, and yet I find that the board and the president has taken this action as a matter of attempting to try to appease one affiliate who is uncomfortable with the.
But if what you say is correct, Brian, then in fact there's no constitutional justification for that to happen, right?
Did the ACB board actually vote to take a specific action to support?
No, the ACB board was not allowed to take a vote because we couldn't get enough. We couldn't get together in a fashion that allowed us to do two things with the calendar. One, give 14 days notice of the meeting.
Well, you
and
did
two,
in fact
have the meeting occur
meeting,
in
Ryan.
Such a time that the decision could be made prior to. The deadline for the DOJ complaint to be filed.
But you did, in fact, vote on in a certain fashion because...
In a certain fashion.
And so what I'm asking is, did you also vote in a certain fashion? Did ACB vote to do anything specific to support Iowa? Or did
they voted
support
not,
for Iowa
not,
only come...
They voted
not
to recommend to the president and the executive committee not to sign on as a complainant.
But they also
passed a motion or voted to indicate that it was the general opinion of the board to supporting its affiliate, GDY affiliate, through actions at its national office to in their attempt to forward.
Those were the two specific motions.
This. So there's two separate motions, not to be a complainant, but to support GDY.
I think the other thing that is important to note here is that the day after this meeting, I represented GDY at this board meeting, and John Taylor of Iowa represented the Iowa Council of the United Blind, represented their point of view. The next day I talked to the president, and he asked me if we wanted to hold a meeting of the executive committee, if we wanted to hold more meetings and do more things to continue this dialogue. And I basically told him that we were running out of time. There is a six-month time period with the DOJ in which if a person is discriminated against, they have 6 months, 180 days, in which to file a complaint. Stephanie's dates of discrimination were June 5 and 6, as we've talked about, Jonathan, and December 5th and 6th was coming very quickly, and we decided that enough dialogue had taken place. GDUI lost the vote of the board acting in its advisory capacity by a relatively substantial number, which made me very sad. But since we had the ability to have the support of the national office, I made the decision as GDUI president that we would not prolong this dialogue, that we would move forward and send the complaint with the assistance of the ACB national office. And so that's what we did.
The other thing I wanted to mention, Jonathan, was I was at the New Mexico conference that was referred to earlier, where Joanne Wilson of the Rehabilitation Services Administration held this conference on the future of residential rehabilitation. A large portion of that conference had to do with orientation and mobility. And I was in a meeting where we were discussing the subject of consumer choice. And during that discussion, Joanne Wilson did stand up in my presence and indicate that it was her belief that an orientation center could make the decision to not allow guide dog users to use their dogs at an orientation center because it would allow that individual to use visual means during a process where they needed to focus exclusively on non-visual means, both for orientation and mobility and for all other aspects of life.
Interesting.
I find that to be an amazing point of view. Being a guide dog user, I can tell you my dog, I simply don't tell him where I want him to go and just sit back and let it happen. I use a lot of non-visual techniques in getting from point A to point B.
I sure do, too.
And so I don't think that the statement that Joanne Wilson made has any real standing in fact. But it does have a standing in terms of the philosophy of both the Iowa Orientation Center and that of Nebraska, Louisiana, Texas, New Mexico, Hawaii, to name just a few. So this is not an issue that's exclusively an Iowa issue. This is a tip of the iceberg kind of scenario. This is just a case in point, but it's the case that's available to us now, and I hope that we can get behind it thoroughly.
Brian, I appreciate your call.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Talk to you later, you guys.
Nice to meet you.
Thanks,
good
Brian.
Job.
Bye-bye now. Minneapolis, Minnesota, hello.
Hello, this is Becky Craigness calling.
Hello.
Hello, I just want to say, first of all, to Stephanie, I am a former Iowan, and I did go through the program for 6 months. I just want to tell you how encouraged I am that you're standing up for what you believe in. I also want to say that during the time that I was in the program, which is a good 10, 12 years ago, we were actually told very negative things about dog guides and about how
same when I was too.
Yeah, so I mean that not only are we not as participants of the program, not only are we not told anything, we are told very, very, very negative things about having
Thank
a guide
so
dog,
much.
Using a guide dog.
So you're saying the department is anti-guide dog?
Yes. Yes, they are. They are. And
if you call an ace, an ace.
Absolutely. I totally agree, and I just, as a former Iowan, I've been doing my best. A lot of Iowans who are guide dog users don't have computers and can't listen today, but I've been talking in consultation with one who really wants to get a GDUI affiliate off the ground and support Stephanie through all this. And I would just be totally willing to swear on a stack of Bibles that I heard so many negative comments in what they call their business of blindness class.
Yes, ma'am.
Which, is basically they tell you their philosophy, and it's supposed to be a discussion, but it never is. It's
no.
just
it's a teasing.
You sit
lesson.
Back and you listen to their
to
garbage. Yep, you sit back, you listen to their garbage, and they just tell you all kinds of negative things about dog guides, and it's just really, it's not fair, and I'm glad, Stephanie, that you're standing up to them.
Thank you kindly.
Well, thanks for calling, Becky, and I love your new album.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
See you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Becky.
It is a good album. Go out and buy it. Boundbrook, New Jersey, hello.
New Jersey, it's Columbus, Ohio.
Well, how on earth did it come up? It's got NJ, and even I can't get Ohio out of NJ. But anyway, no.
I love my calling card. I just love it.
I know the voice anyway.
I can be incognito this way.
Yes.
Actually, I've been cloned, and there are several images of me floating around everywhere, I think. But I want to echo Rebecca in saying that Stephanie, I am so glad you are coming forward to do this. I just think it takes a lot of courage, and we don't know what you're going to be facing in the future, but I'm really glad that you've come forward to do this and have the guts to really challenge these folks. What I just do not understand as a blind person, and there are a million hats you could wear on this one, but what I don't understand as a blind person, given my rehab experience, and I went to a residential rehab center when I first began losing a lot of vision, and I just can't fathom a place that wants to indoctrinate you into a philosophy of blindness. I don't. That's so foreign to my rehab experience.
You know what? You're very fortunate.
Yeah, and I completely understand how Iowans, maybe who went through that, don't really understand anything else and so would support it. I don't
think negative. But
you know
what? The ones that ever said anything were like alienated. You know, they just push it aside.
Yeah, and I just don't. It's amazing to me that people have to put up with that. I can't even imagine where I went. They taught skills. You know,
there's too many laws that say you're not to do it. So I don't understand why it's been this long that nobody said anything.
Well, unfortunately, they have national support now at RSA, it seems, which is disturbing too. As a past GDUI president, I don't think this case could be in any better hands than it's in right now, as far as our president now and our board in handling it in a very mature manner. We as a board, I think, Debbie, I can maybe say this just sort of as a member of the board, but we took a very mature stand on this. We weren't going to fight the Iowa Council of the United Blind. We weren't going to fight. What we were going to fight was the Iowa Department for the Blind and this policy all over the country.
Well, what a lot of people don't know is most of the Iowa Council, a lot of it is old directors from the Iowa Department from the Blind. But it is.
I guess I'd finally like to say, though, that as an ACB member, completely separate from GDUI, the little contact that I have with ACB, separate from GDUI, I am so disappointed. I am in the board's unofficial action in advising the president and the other bodies. I'm so glad there were four board members who stood up and said, no, we believe that our name should be on that complaint. And I think this summer at the convention, when the candidates forum comes up and when other issues come up, you might want to be asking those people who run where they voted if they're running again for a position. I just think that's crucial, because if we are more concerned about the unity of ACB than people's civil rights on a crucial issue, why do we exist? I mean, I realize
I think
that sounds pretty radical, but...
Well, this issue is big, just a guide dog issue. It is a civil rights issue. It does concern guide dog users, which is why GDUI is taking such an actually vitally important role in the case. But the big issue is civil rights. And if ACB can't stand up for the civil rights of blind people and protect the laws that guarantee us those civil rights, it is a pretty sad time.
It's a little bit backwards. It's a little bit like the tail wagging the dog. Have the political
Someone had to get it in.
That's the point for me to go out on, because I couldn't have made a better pun than that.
All right.
I'm going to hang up and listen.
Thanks, Janine.
Thanks, Janine.
Okay, bye-bye. This is Blind Line, and our number, if you'd like to give us a call, is area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800. 1-800-812-2800, and when spiderphone.com asks you for a conference code, it's 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512. And I should say that this program is open to anybody. I've been doing my best to be playing a bit of a devil's advocate role in the interests of balance. If anyone is listening from the Iowa Department or from the Iowa Council of the United Blind or anyone who has a different perspective, you're most welcome to come on the program. That's what democracy is all about, and you'll certainly get a fair hearing. Let's go to West Comac, New York. Hello.
Hello, Jonathan.
Richard. Hi.
Yeah, I just have to say I can't agree with everyone. I mean, it just seems ridiculous as to why ACB on a national level is doing this flip-flop. I mean, it's I think in some respects they're being discriminatory, because it shouldn't matter if a person is going into a program and whether they are using a cane or a dog for mobility. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
Anyone want to comment on that?
Well, I think she's absolutely right. And the law, what is more important is, it isn't my opinion or Stephanie's opinion or Sheila's opinion or anybody else's opinion. The opinions of many have been turned into law. Not only one law, but several laws. State laws, federal law, and these two mobility aids are given equal standing, and we fight daily to grant guide dogs access to restaurants and businesses and the hotel industry and public transportation and every other kind of access that you can possibly think of, and suddenly we don't have entree into what should be, for newly blinded people, the most safe, open, warm environment filled with possibilities. I mean, that's what orientation and rehab centers should be about.
I totally agree there.
About possibilities.
Yeah.
Not limitations, and not philosophy that flies in the face of the law and flies in the face of human decency. Why deny somebody who could really benefit from it the joys of using a guide dog? It doesn't make any sense.
May I relate to say something?
Please do, Stephanie.
What I don't understand, too, is, you know, when I've seen a lot of hearing impaired people, and they're losing their eyesight, too. And to me, that would be a very scary thing, to be out there by myself with a cane. I mean, it was bad enough when I first had sleep shades on and could see nothing, and all I had to do was rely on my hearing, but if that went too. And I think that I would feel very safe with a dog, but the choice on a dog in that school is not even brought up for people that have hearing problems and visually impaired. And that really saddens me, because do we let our feelings of the way we think step into what would be better for that person? See, the choice of that person to be more mobile because they can't hear and see, we should do the best we can to help them. That's what I would feel like if I was a school of rehabilitation.
Did you have anything else to add, Richard?
Well, just the only thing is that as far as what they said is about the Iowa Council, just having the opinion that canes are only acceptable and not dogs, it kind of astounds me. I mean, I've been a guide dog. I have had the opportunity for a short time to have a guide dog, and unfortunately for me, it didn't work out. But just that whole attitude, it just flies in the face of ACB and you know what they're trying, what supposedly they're trying to do.
Well, Richard, Jonathan, we want to thank you for giving us, for still keeping our right to that choice
yes.
so upfront in your mind, even though having a guide dog didn't work out for you. That is absolutely what it's all about, and I really appreciate your input coming from your personal perspective of not even
well,
being
to me,
a guide.
You know what you're saying is a no-brainer here. I mean,
well, yes,
in
it is
my
a no-brainer.
Opinion, they're not even They're wrong.
The only thing that's keeping me sane through all of these proceedings is the fact that I know that one side is so right and the other side is so inappropriately wrong that is the one thing I hang on to when the details and the disappointments start to overwhelm me.
And of course the legal battles are going to be nobody wants to go through this, but it is going to be a tough haul.
Well, Richard, I thank you for phoning.
Nobody's here.
Take care, John.
Okay.
Thank you. Here to speak to the Iowa Council and the Iowa Department for the Blind, and I was at the meeting. I will put on their hat for 32 seconds and say that they would be the first to say that they are not anti-guide dogs in terms of access, in terms of access to their department. What their theory is, and I don't agree with it, but I just feel I need to clarify it, what their theory is that during this very vitally important, crucial orientation and mobility portion of getting accustomed to being blind, that guide dogs should have no part in that because it is like using sight, and that the only way to truly come to terms with blindness is via use of the long white cane. But they would not say that they are anti-guide dogs, and they would not say that they would not fight for our rights to have access in public places and that kind of thing. It's just during the orientation process.
Well, it's really unfortunate that we don't have someone here to say that for them, and there's plenty of other evidence to the contrary.
All right. Well, to be fair, I didn't ask them, and maybe I should have had I been more appraised with the story. But let's talk to Ken in Louisiana. Hello there.
This is Walter Siren from New Orleans.
Hi, Walter.
Hi, Walter.
I want to clear up something because something does puzzle me a little bit. I've been hearing all about who's on whose side and so forth, and that the Iowa Council, of course, was supposed to be opposing the GDUI. But Donna Selinger, as I recall, posted a message on ACBL that the Iowa Council did not oppose it. They just remained neutral. Could somebody clarify it?
There was a message on the ACBL that I saw that said that before the meeting that Chris and Melanie and I attended, that the Iowa Council of the United Blind Board had not yet made a decision about this whole thing with the Iowa Department for the Blind. But when we went to the meeting, the Iowa Board met after the formal meeting and said that they wanted ACB to let them know within 24 hours what they would do. When the ACB Advocacy Concerns Committee met and agreed that we should sign on, that ACB should sign on to the complaint. At that time, the Iowa Council of the United Blind asked for a board hearing. And that was what Brian Charlson was speaking of when he called earlier and said that it was essential that the board meet before its 14-day constitutional period could be honored because we were running out of time to file the complaint. At that time, the Iowa Council of the United Blind was very interested in our not filing. They stood firm with their program at that meeting and were urging ACB not to sign on to the complaint. So by the time of the meeting in Iowa and by the time of the board meeting that Brian spoke about, the board teleconference where the board met solely as an advisory body rather than as the ACB board, by that time the Iowa Council of the United Blind had decided to take a firm stand, a public stand, in support of the program at the Iowa Department for the Blind.
Oh, okay. Now, I have to say I agree with Brian about the fact that since we did pass a resolution about the guide dog situation, that the council, ACB, I think, should have signed on to this thing. Well, answer the phone.
Yeah, answer the phone.
Answer the other phone because it's ringing. She's used to me answering and I'm on the cell phone, so she didn't know that.
No, man.
But anyhow. Anyway, that's what I was going to say is I think Brian was definitely right because the board has been given the power to take this action because of the resolution that was passed. So I think the council should have, ACB. Now, it can't tell its affiliates, naturally, what to do, and unfortunately that's democracy. But still, I think the National could have signed on to this thing and should have.
Well, Walter, I have a feeling that you're going to get a lot of messages on your list as a result of this program, so no doubt the debate will continue there.
It can't be any worse than what we've been getting on there. And I can tell you, I can read part of them enough to tell that if they're not acting crazy, and I can skip some, too. So anyway, one more thing, too. When they start two people talking at once, calm them down a little. Boy, that got me disgusted with CNN Live so much. I used to like that program, but they let everybody talk at one time.
I'm actually quite enjoying it. It's like crossfire. I appreciate your call.
Okay, well, anyway, that's what I wanted to say.
Okay.
Thank you, Walter.
Thanks, Walter.
Okay.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
This is Addison, Texas. Hello there.
Oh, yeah, well, really, it's Dallas.
Oh, I'm going to give up naming cities because it's obviously completely useless.
Really?
Go ahead.
I'm Donna Miller.
Hello, Donna.
And I'm from Dallas. And I've been a guide dog handler for 33 years, since 1969. And this same scenario was played out 20 years ago in Kentucky, back in 1970. I had to attend a rehab center, and they told me I could not bring my dog. I told them I went nowhere without my dog, and when I showed up with the dog, there was some heated words, but I did get in. This
good
was
for you,
probably,
Donna.
Yeah.
Back
yay.
Before the ADA. I said, you will not do this to me. And actually, I took such a stand that... when I took my mobility training, I used my dog.
Well, I'm sorry. Well, you want to come here and try?
Well, kudos to you, Donna, for actually changing the program that you were involved
yes.
in. Right
yay.
Up along there, with kudos to Stephanie for not going away with her tail between her legs when they wouldn't let her in, because at whatever stage we have to stand up for ourselves, you two ladies have both done it.
Time, and I didn't have a lick of sense. I didn't have a sense to be afraid or to think what might
absolutely.
Happen.
Absolutely.
I just bowled like a, you know, a bowl
blind
of
blind courage.
because this, now, if I would go to Iowa and, you know, they mentioned in Texas, too, yes, there's a, whoo, dear. Anyway, it's a little bit of everywhere. But if I would have to travel now, I had an accident 2 years ago and I have to use a quad cane. I cannot use a white cane anymore, and if I couldn't use a dog, I'd be in trouble.
You know what, though? Can I say something about Iowa?
Go ahead.
I have never had any problems going anywhere but the blind school.
Well, it's the blind
everybody
places.
Else have treated me just like gold. I'm not kidding.
It's,
they've been
it's
very
the blind
kind to me and Lily.
It gives us the biggest issues. It seems like they've got this thing that, you know, they are right, and we have to go exactly by their rules, and I'm not one to do that. I'm a
no,
little bit
neither.
Of a rebel.
Well, it's been said before, and I think it bears saying again that it's a question of philosophy as opposed to teaching skills. We don't go to these centers to learn philosophy. We go there to learn skills, and
well, to me,
this
you know,
situation gives the appearance of more of a concern for teaching the proper blindness or the
well,
a certain blindness philosophy as opposed to learning
yeah,
skills.
Yeah, but think about it this way. They want to put us in their set mold.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
They want us to be, you know, the ideal thing, all blind people stereotype, I guess is maybe the word I'm
yeah.
looking for.
I kind of think that tends to be here, too.
This is, they want everybody to have the same, and the same mold doesn't fit every shape.
No, that's why we have choices in America. That's what makes our country good.
And, you know, I've learned through the years that if you don't stand up for yourself, lots of times nobody else is going to do it. And, you know, they were so shocked when I showed up in 1970. I kind of rattled them a little bit, and that was back, of course, before the ADA.
Good for you, Donna.
Yeah, because if I would have known that, Donna would have called you June 5th, the first day when I walked in the door.
And, well, the first school, I, you know, pilot dogs found out I was a rebel, and leader dogs knows I'm one.
Oh, that's where Lily's from, too.
Right. Well, Abe is a leader dog.
Oh, cool.
Oh, well, being in Texas, you can give a rebel yell.
I've learned a lot through those years that if you don't, you know, take a stand, but my dog, you know, because I've taken the stand that I have and I do it, I try to be, you know, very diplomatic about it and, you know, be polite and be kind. And I've been to places where, you know, I never expected to be.
I think this outlines another really important part that is probably a good idea to repeat here, too. Donna, you said you've been working dogs for over 30 years, and your experience with standing up to your center took place in 1970. So you had already been working a dog for several years. You were already more secure and probably more comfortable with your identity in who you were as a blind person.
No, I've been working a dog for a year.
Huh?
I've been working a dog since 69.
Right. So what I'm saying is when you had your confrontation with the center, you were probably a stronger person than a lot of the people who go through these, who go through the blindness rehabilitation programs when they're at a fresher, more vulnerable stage of just having lost their sight or being teenagers right out of high school. And so you probably had, you know, a little more gumption going in the door there than a lot of people who were maybe feeling more fragile.
Well, I was full of
than
myself.
You were feeling at the time.
You know, I mean, to me,
and
my
we're glad of it.
Was the most important thing, and I was determined that,
yes,
you know, Buffy was going to get in if I got in.
Well, Donna, I appreciate you calling, and I hope you have a lovely afternoon in Dallas.
All right, then.
Thank you.
Thanks, Donna.
Bye-bye now.
I'll take care, and I wish you the best, because this is, you know, this time this kind of thing stops.
Thanks for your phone. Phoning. Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
The American Foundation for the Blind is proud to support ACB Radio. Visit AFB's online bookstore at www.afb.org to order Deborah Kendrick's newest title in the Jobs That Matter series.
This is Blindline. Hello.
Hello, Jonathan. This is Pat Sheehan. How are you?
Very well, Pat. Nice to hear from you.
Good to hear from you, too. I'm one of the four board members who voted to go along with the suit with the American Council of the Blind.
Right.
And I'm happy to be one of those four that agreed that this should happen. I think that one of the things that the board did not focus on properly was that this, and it's been brought up before, but I just want to reiterate it, is that this is very much an ADA and a 504 issue. And I don't think it can be stressed hard enough or long enough that this isn't just a question of, let's say, one big happy ACB family. This goes really to the core of what ACB is all about. For too many years, we have talked about access issues, access to facilities, access to Hawaii, and I don't see where the situation. Is too far, goes too far the other way where you don't have access to a rehab facility, and then they start denying you restaurants. Then they start denying you access
right,
to other facilities because they happen to put a policy in place. Yes.
The state attorney general, they even went on TV and backed them up, so that almost made it, you know, an opening for people to, you know, stop me from going in their establishment.
I would agree. I think that when you look at this, when you look at this issue, you have, you know, certainly guide dog users, which has its point of view. Iowa has its point of view. I think also ACB has a certain set of principles that people join ACB for. And I think one of these principles is access, and access to facilities is what we've always striven for, whether it's pedestrian safety or access to Hawaii, access to other facilities. And all of a sudden, when it's not convenient and it's not easy for us to make a choice to sign on with guide dog users because we might hurt the feelings of Iowa, we decide to basically knuckle under. And I'm not happy with the board at all in the decision that they made not to support guide dog users in signing on this complaint.
Pat, I'm interested in this. Is there a general doctrine of collective responsibility that the board of directors assumes? I mean, once the board's made a decision, are board members free to dissent in that way?
I hope so. Otherwise, I'll probably be in a lot of trouble. I would think that certainly within a program like this, that ACB members, whether we're board members or whether we're members of affiliates, that we can go on record as saying that we disagree with the decision of the whole. Once again, as Brian said earlier, the board was in an advisory capacity, and I think that it's very important, as Debbie has said and Sheila has said, that the ACB family, let's say, as a whole, ask these kinds of questions with respect to the board in general. Why did they vote the way they did? What were their reasons for not taking a position? How can we say that we're for access for our individuals and then not side with guide dog users? It just doesn't make any sense to me. So I think that we have an obligation as individuals to stand up and say what is correct.
All right. Do you know, and are you able to tell us who the other two board members were who voted in favor of joining the action?
Well, we had Don Christensen was voted in favor of the action, and Paul Edwards. Now, Artis Basin was not there, and neither was... there was one that was... one other member that was not there, and that skips my mind right now.
So there was Brian, yourself, Dawn, and Paul.
And Paul that voted in favor. And we had two members that were not... that were not there.
Okay.
So I think it's important, you know, that we stand up and
Mitch Pomeranz.
Mitch Pomeranz. I'm sorry. Thank you, Debbie. Yes.
Nice to meet you.
I think one thing that's important to point out here, and again, I guess I'm a Libra, and they talk about Libras and the scales of justice and being fair. So I'm now going to speak for the other side of the board and let you at least know what they said. Obviously, I don't agree with it, but fairness compels me to do this.
Very good.
The ACB board has a couple of attorneys that are members of that board. One such attorney is Steve Spiker. He is ACB first vice president. And the other attorney is Mr. Oral Miller. And many of you know Oral Miller was our national representative and the first executive director of the American Council of the Blind. And these attorneys believed, now I also want to say Melanie Brunson, whom I've also referred to as an attorney and the director of ACB Advocacy and Governmental Affairs, did not agree with them in toto, but Steve and Oral believed that there were certain weaknesses in the GDUI complaint. And that this was not, even though Stephanie had been discriminated against, that this was not the best case to bring before the Department of Justice.
Oh yeah.
What we basically said to them was, and what we tried to make clear to them was, they were talking in terms of court cases. What judge is going to do what, and what's going to happen here, and what's going to happen there. I think what Steve and Oral forgot, and what I verified with Melanie Brunson, is that people, grassroots advocates, send complaints to the Department of Justice.
I have people on my side, too.
They do not have to be as tight as a legal brief that will appear before a judge.
Yeah.
And so the complaint may have a couple of flaws in it. I don't know. I don't think so. But the complaint is probably imperfect in some ways. But the Department of Justice is going to be the prosecutor here. And what's basically going to happen is they're going to look that this organization, the Iowa Department for the Blind, provides a program of services for people with disabilities, and someone, and that someone being Ms. Stephanie Doman, was denied service because she has a guide dog. So
although the complaint isn't as tight as a legal brief, Melanie thought, and all of GDUI certainly feels, and I spoke with Charlie Crawford, and he felt this way, that the complaint has enough merit, and that it is proof that these laws, 504 of the Rehab Act and the Americans with Disabilities Act, have been violated to such a point that the Department of Justice, those will be the things that the Department of Justice will stress. But several members of the board did vote no against GDUI, not only because of the ICUB, which is the acronym for the Iowa Council of the United Blind, not only because the Iowa Council of the United Blind had problems with this stand that ACB and GDUI were taking, but Steve Spiker and Oral Miller did express these concerns about some of the points made in the complaint. But again, I just wanted to stress the fact that Department of Justice complaints, for the most part, aren't written by attorneys.
Right, well, that's a very important point you make, and so it may be, in fact, that issue outweighed in the minds of some the politics of ICUB versus GDUI.
I hope so. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I would think so, Debbie, and I would have been much happier if the board had focused on that aspect as opposed to what judge it was going to go to, what circuit court it was going to go to, the arguments and getting together a perfect case. I think as a civil rights issue that this is very, very important. And I think the board overlooked some very basic critical elements that we need to focus on as part of the board. And I think it is extremely important, Debbie, and I would reiterate extremely strongly to everyone who's listening, is let your board members know, let your president know how you feel about this issue and what side you come down on, because the board gives guidance to the president in this particular issue, and I think that my feeling is that the arguments were not perhaps the correct arguments, and I think that the board needs to hear from individuals as to did we make the right decision or did we make the wrong decision in deciding not to sign on to this complaint with GDUI.
But Pat, I take it you would accept that it's the old adage in advocacy that you have to pick your battles carefully, and that once you start taking legal action, you set legal precedents, and so it's really critical that you get the best compelling watertight case that you can.
Yes, I would agree with that.
As one who wasn't at that meeting, would it be appropriate at this point in time to discuss a little bit of what people were comfortable with, uncomfortable with, in terms of the watertightness of this particular complaint?
Well, there were some issues regarding whether Stephanie had indeed been offered services within the same building, just not in the particular rehab program, and things of that nature. And they just said, I truly believe, and I was at the meeting, I still believe that the overriding feeling was we cannot upset ICUB. But I would have been remiss had I not brought out the other aspect. I was not very clear on what Steve and Oral were saying, because it was a lot of legal stuff that judges won't look at such and such, and you know, this section and that section. And as I pointed out at the board meeting, and as was pointed out later, attorneys don't write most of the complaints to the Department of Justice. Individuals do.
It really seems that they maybe were focusing on a lot of the details on the balance sheet instead of looking at the big picture, overriding
issues. Exactly the case, I would say.
Which is what it sounds like to me, and it's very, very sad that people, and I know there were eloquent people on that conference, that they were not able to hear the main points.
Right, and I think the case does have some complexities with it, and it's very easy to get into the complexities, particularly the legal complexities of this case, and the board doesn't have a lot of legal expertise. So when you start dealing in that, I think it's very easy to get overwhelmed. But I think that when you look at the basic case, it's very it's very easy to see that it's an ADA or 504 violation. And many times the arguments that we heard throughout the conversation were, we feel that we understand that it could be discrimination, but, and they didn't want to take that step to upset Iowa, ICUB, and make the decision, the hard decision, that I think that we were put in office to make.
Well, Pat, it's always good to hear from a board member, especially a dissenting one, and I appreciate you coming on the program.
Well, very good. Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure.
Good luck, Debbie. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Hello, this is Blind Line. Thank you for waiting.
Hey there. George Spies here in Arizona.
Hi, George.
Good for you, Stephanie. I'm really proud of you, hon.
Thank you.
I've got a couple of concerns. One is, from what Brian said, that they really couldn't do anything because time constraint. Is this a done deal, or are they going to have another get together on this?
It is a done deal in terms of the filing of the complaint. GDUI and four guide dog schools are actually signed on to the complaint. Now, what ACB can do in the future is send a letter of support to the complaint, as five other guide dog schools can do. And, of course, ACB, I cannot say enough how helpful ACB has been to GDUI in the filing of this complaint. The national office has been wonderful to us. They have answered questions. They helped us draft the press release. Charlie Crawford drafted the first draft of the complaint himself, and then GDUI put in changes, and then Melanie Brunson, whose name I keep mentioning, tightened it up even more in terms of the legality so that we were covered. So the ACB National Office has been extremely supportive, and I know will continue to be. But as far as the complaint, it has been sent. It was sent on, what day was it sent? Friday, I guess. Yes, Friday. So the complaint has been sent. And, it was sent Wednesday.
Was it Monday? I don't know.
We're just back covered all the days now.
Early this week. I'm sorry.
Sometime between Sunday and Thanksgiving, the complaint was actually sent.
It was sent probably Wednesday. I think the board met Tuesday, and we sent it out on Wednesday. But anyway, don't quote me on what day it was sent, but it is sent. And the American Council of the Blind can continue to support us through the national office, which I'm sure they will, and they can send a letter of support for the complaint if they choose to do that.
As it stands now, no one else could be put on the... There's not a provision in the law for these five other guide dog schools or ACB to attach themselves to the complaint?
One of the unfortunate things we were up against was that we were waiting for ACB to take action, and we were waiting to see what was going on in Iowa. And we were also asked by ACB not to be really public about this. So we were having to sit on our hands, and as Debbie has mentioned several times, the deadline was fast approaching. And so many of us share your same feelings of, if this guide dog school had more time to have a look at it, they would have signed on as a chief complainant, and I know maybe half the rest of the country would have as well. So we're going to have to live with this, because there was the deadline, the December 5th, which was 6 months after Stephanie's actual last incident there at the center, and we're stuck with this now, so we'll have to find other ways to support.
Now, ACB, there is something called an amicus curiae. Have I said that correctly, Sheila?
Yes, that's the letter that we're expecting from ACB and from the guide dog
schools. An amicus curiae means that the guide dog schools that want to, and ACB, it becomes attached to the complaint. there it's a letter of support that actually begins to travel with the complaint. The difference is that they're not signed on to the original complaint, but with the amicus curiae, the letter, once the letter is received, it is attached to the complaint and travels through the DOJ process with the complaint. So it is our hope that at some point, and I would urge all of you listening, if you think ACB should sign on amicus curiae or simply send a letter of support, then that is something that you should tell your president, tell the board members, start talking about on ACBL and ACB leadership and all of the other ACB lists, because it's almost as good as they're having signed on in the first place, because it will attach itself to the complaint and be there for the remainder of the complaint process in DOJ.
And is there talk that there's going to be another meeting to see that that happens, or?
As far as I know, the meetings are over. GDUI just brought the thing to a halt. We, as I had said, and as Sheila just said, we were running out of time, and I didn't want to waste any more time. So my feeling is if the membership begins to say, we want ACB to send a letter of support for this complaint, there is no reason why another meeting can't be scheduled to discuss the possibility of ACB sending a letter of support for the complaint.
Very good.
Well, good for you guys. And Stephanie, again, I'm real proud of you. I know that I've experienced similar problems here in Arizona. And, you know, not to the degree that you have, but I would like to get some orientation with my dog, and it doesn't take priority. So keep up the good work, guys.
Thanks for phoning in, George.
Thanks for calling in.
Okay. Bye-bye now. All right, if you'd like to give us a call, it's been a busy old time, but the board is free. Area code 212-812-2800 is the number. That's area code 212-812-2800, and the code, courtesy of spiderphone.com, is 0480-5512, 0480-5512, and we're talking about the situation in Iowa and beyond with respect to guide dogs and orientation centres. Is it a possibility then, Debbie, that you'll have a situation where there is evidence called on this complaint and IECARB is on one side and GDUI is on the other, two organizations of the ACB actually contesting an issue in a public forum?
The possibility of that is highly likely, because what we have said is because the Attorney General in the state of Iowa came out on the side of the Iowa Department for the Blind, we have asked in the complaint that the complaint be investigated rather than the complaint being mediated. And so the complaint will be investigated, and depending on the outcome of that investigation and what Iowa decides it will or will not do, things could get a little more sticky and there could indeed be a suit. Right now, there is no suit. Right now, what we have done is filed a complaint with the Department of Justice asking that the matter be investigated. That does not mean, however, that a suit won't come down at some point. And, yes, what you have asked me, the answer is definitely yes. In fact, that has already happened. I would like to say that when we went to the meeting in Iowa, the Iowa people personally were very nice to me. And yet, we were definitely on very different sides of the fence. I just want to say, too, Jonathan, that one of the reasons why this complaint is so significant is the fact that the Attorney General came down on the side of the Iowa Department for the Blind. I have a feeling I know why he did that. I don't think it had one itty-bitty thing to do with the law. I think it had to do with the fact that the Attorney General saw this, saw Stephanie's letters, and saw all the hoopla about this, and he thought, that Iowa Department for the Blind, they've been dealing with those people for years. They know what's best for those people. So therefore, I'm going to come down on their side. But that is a dangerous precedent, and it shows the power that these agencies for the blind have, which is why they must be held accountable to upholding the laws of the land, because they hold the power of the course of people's lives in their hands. When the Attorney General will even thumb his nose at state and federal law and say, but I know Alan Harris and the wonderful people down there at the Iowa Department for the Blind know what's best for those people.
All right, let's go to Minnesota once again. Hello, this is Blind Line.
Yes, it's Becky Kragness again.
Oh, well, how are you?
I'm back again.
Yes.
I am calling to just kind of look to the future. And just since I have a chance to talk to Stephanie...
Okay, I'm going to have to ask you to make it brief because we generally have a one-call rule, so I'm being a bit generous.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm
really that's sorry. Right, only because I like your album, you see. So,
oh, okay. Okay. I hope that even if you win the case and that they allow you to come back on or come back and do the course, pay attention to what they're doing psychologically. That's all I'll say. Pay attention because they make go within the context of a law, but they may not. They may not be kind.
May I say something?
Sure.
I've also, with help on some other people from my guide dog school, I've also got the Educational Board of Washington D.C. in it too to investigate, and I really think it's very important that. When I wrote this complaint up that I put in there, that people needed more freedom of choice and that no one had the right to teach a philosophy using federal and state money like that. That went out years ago.
Amen.
So I tried to point it that way, and I also tried to point it that everybody says 504 in the federal, but there's also a state law. There's two being broken here, not just one.
Excellent. Well, thank you for the advice, Becky, and I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye, Becky.
Bye-bye now.
Again.
Yeah. Buy the album. Let's go to Colorado. Hello.
Oh, see, I'm in multiple places again. It's Janine again, Jonathan.
Oh, man. No, you haven't got an album, Janine, so... Yeah, I should just cut you off.
You could.
Go ahead.
Before you do, the only reason that I called in, and Debbie can elaborate on this, is that there is a precedent where two ACB affiliate organizations have gone against each other, and that was in the Hawaii case with the Hawaii Council of the Blind and Guide Dog Users Incorporated, and it was, to say the least, uncomfortable. And I will leave that one to Debbie to explain.
Wonderful. Thank you, and we should have a computer game called "Where in the World is Janine Stanley?" because she came up from New Jersey before.
Well, I'm expecting Brian to call up now.
Yeah. I'll definitely cut him off. All right, so yes, so of course that was the business with the quarantine issues, wasn't it? And there was a bit of controversy over that.
And at the time that the Hawaii legal suit came up in the late 70s, there were two Hawaii affiliates. There was the Aloha Council of the Blind and the Hawaii Council of the Blind, and the Hawaii Council of the Blind believed in the quarantine. They were very much the iCub of the Hawaii case, and they didn't want the quarantine to be stopped. And what ACB basically did is what it did in this case. It let GDUI, not that it could stop us, but GDUI took the lead, and eventually ACB came on board with financial support for the case and did a lot of work on behalf of GDUI for the case. But especially in the beginning, GDUI had to take the lead on the case because there was this upheaval, and indeed there were three affiliates because the Aloha Council believed that, sided with GDUI, that the quarantine had to stop. But it's basically about access, and this Iowa case is about access, and the point that I was making when Becky called in again to plug her album. No, I'm only teasing Becky. When Becky called in again, was that these agencies and organizations have for the blind have such power over blind people. That's why they have to be forced to be held accountable to honoring the law. They have to be.
How much of this is an ACB-NFB thing?
We are not, GDY, we're not going there in terms of ACB-NFB. We know that the NFB has a different philosophy about guide dogs than we do.
But it's the NFB. It's the NFB philosophy that's permeating this whole thing, is it not?
Well, I think that the overriding thing is the legislation that is clear, and that is what GDUI is focusing on. The philosophy is really something that shouldn't even enter into the discussion. The philosophy does play a part in it, but it's not anything that GDUI is actively speaking against or has anything to do with at this point in the proceedings.
But you're right. Joanne Wilson is a federationist, as was Fred Schroeder before her, who was her predecessor in directing the Rehabilitation Services Administration. And, of course, NFB's original headquarters, before they moved to my old hometown, Baltimore, was in Iowa. So what I think we could say, just to put out information, is that the roots of that philosophy have their foundation in NFB. But we do not want this to be an ACB-NFB thing, that we hate the NFB, we want to fight against the NFB. What we're saying is this is an access issue. A person who is seeking programs and services has been denied programmatic access to a state organization that receives federal funds solely because she uses a guide dog, and that is a violation of state and federal law.
All right. How long is this process likely to take, do you think, before there's a resolution one way or the other?
We're thinking that we're going to give it about 3 months to see what happens in the Department of Justice, where our complaint is, but this could go on for several years because depending on the outcome of the DOJ complaint, depending on how quickly it moves through the Department of Justice system, and then should it go to suit. Our hope is that it will be settled in a matter of months, but that is a very positive hope and probably will not take place. But we're hoping that the complaint will be on the fast track. Our friends at the Department of Justice have told us that right now all complaints dealing with service animals, which of course Stephanie's dog Lily is, under the Department of Justice rules, the regs that govern the Americans with Disabilities Act, is a service animal, that any complaints concerning service animals are on the fast track. So that's we're hopeful. And so we're going to begin asking the Department of Justice in about 3 months, hey, what's going on with our complaint? And so you'll be seeing what updates out on the various lists. And should you like us to come back and discuss what happens in the future, we're delighted to do that.
Do you think that there's a difference in terms of this particular philosophy of rehabilitation based on whether the organization is a state organization that receives public funding or a private organization? Does that make a difference?
It makes a difference if it's a totally private organization. It makes some difference, I think. However, even businesses have to grant access to people with guide dogs. But the fact that this program does receive federal and state funds makes it even a more clear-cut case. But private entities that don't receive any state or federal monies, it may not be quite as clear, but it's important to recognize the fact that if they provide programs and services to the public, those programs and services must be open to guide dog handlers unless the provision of that service would be significantly altered by the inclusion of a guide dog. And what we would say in terms of rehabilitation training is that no one has proved to anyone's satisfaction that the introduction of a guide dog significantly alters the teaching of computers and Braille and home ec and even orientation and mobility once a person has completed a program at one of the many guide dog schools.
Very interesting.
It really does seem to come down more to a question of, as you suggest, philosophy rather than impacting on the way anybody can learn skills, whether a guide dog is lying by their side when they're trying to learn commands with JAWS on a computer.
Well, I appreciate the three of you giving up so much time to be on the show. We're going to, I'm sure, see the debate continue on all sorts of ACB lists. And, of course, ACB Radio has its own discussion list where people can talk about programming that they've heard. So it'll no doubt go on there as well. And it's good of you to give up some time.
Jonathan, it's good of you to care enough about this issue to give us the time to really discuss it. Thank you.
It's a pleasure. Thank you all.
Okay.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
There we go. That was Stephanie Doman, who is the complainant, and also Debbie Grubb and Sheila Stein from GDUI, Guide Dog Users Incorporated, famous hosts of the Canine Connection show. Well, we have a little bit of time if you'd like to give us a call, about 10 minutes or so before the show ends. You may want to comment on that. What do you make of it? What's also interesting to me is the whole kind of side story that's going on about the internal workings of ACB, really. Fascinating stuff. 212-812-2800 is the number. That's 212-812-2800 and the PIN 0480-5512, courtesy of Spiderphone, 0480-5512. And anyone who ever thought that ACB Radio is somehow constrained in carrying a party line had that theory blown right out of the water, didn't they? And this is very interesting because this is the first program to launch our fourth year of operation. It's still December the 1st, Universal Time, and it was 3 years ago today that ACB Radio began broadcasting. So you may want to give us a quick call before the end of the show and give us some virtual birthday cake or even sing us happy birthday. Oh, beautiful. And tell us what you'd like to see on ACB Radio in the future, maybe, where you'd like to see it go, what you've enjoyed about it, and where you hope it's going to go from here. See? So there's all sorts of things we could talk about after such a very thought-provoking and stimulating program, but there's not long. So get on the phone and give us a call. I'm just hunting around for some of Rebecca's new album, actually, but oh, no. You'll have to tune to the cafe for that. Erica, because I can't find it right now. Erica, 212-812-2800, and then the conference code 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512. We would love to hear from you. And, you know, we're going to be talking on Main Menu in about 48 hours' time or so about some new technology developments yet again from Macromedia. That's a company that really seems to have got the accessibility bit between its teeth. And this time we're going to be talking about developments with Macromedia Director. This is an application that's often used in things like kiosks and often non-PC based applications. And they've developed some self-voicing means of making some of those things accessible if you develop them with Macromedia MX and accessibility in mind. Certainly having the infrastructure in the software is a good start, but then of course you've got to make sure that people use the technology. Well, according to my thing, which has been notoriously unreliable, this says it's Kirksville, Missouri, so let's see. Hello there.
Hi, Jonathan. This is Dennis.
I thought it might be you.
Happy birthday.
Oh, yes, thank you. And another Rebecca Kragner's fan.
Yes.
We should set up a fan club.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to congratulate you on a fascinating, provocative interview.
Yeah, thanks. I must admit it was fascinating, as you say, from this end even.
Well, it was really fascinating because what you were saying earlier about, you know, those who think ACB radio is constrained to follow party lines, because it was we were obviously able to have a very frank and open discussion, and that's certainly one of the beauties about ACB is that you can't have dissenting opinions.
Yes. And
so when is the Mosin baby due now?
Well, now you're talking about something very interesting. On the 26th of February.
Oh,
Yeah. And, of course, you know, you've contributed a lot to ACB Radio in its 3 years with the now defunct Miller Time show.
Well, hopefully someday in the future, perhaps we can unfunk it and bring it back.
Yes, I mean, you hear about things being defunct, but you never hear about things being funked, do you?
No.
And one has to be very careful about how one says that.
Right, yeah. You know, I'm just looking at, on the calendar here, and you're going to have to miss the Mosin explosion the week that your child is born.
Well, I don't know how much you know about babies, but just because it's due on the 26th, it doesn't mean it's going to happen.
Yes, right.
I mean,
you know, I've never actually had one, so...
That'd be a good story. Do you know that we are so short of time here that let me just bring this other call in and we can all just join in together, which I don't normally do. Hello, this is somewhere in Oklahoma now that we are.
Yes, it is. I'm from Ada, Oklahoma, and this is Ruthie. And I just first of all want to say that I certainly enjoyed the show today.
Thank you.
And I thought all the participants were absolutely excellent. And I give the claimant major credit for having gone forward with her action. I think it's really important that we stand up for our rights and what we believe in. And I think that GDUI is a wonderful organization. They've done a lot of great things. And with Debbie Grubb and the other two participants, I'm sure they're going to do well. Secondly, I do want to say happy birthday to ACB Radio.
Well, thank you. And we've got Dennis here, by the way, as well. Do you remember Dennis? Have you been a listener for a wee while?
Cause yes.
Because Uncle Dennis is here as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. See?
I've been listening for a little while. I came upon it by accident a couple of years ago.
Mm.
And I just want to say that I try to tune in as much as I possibly can. And, Jonathan, I want to congratulate you, too, on the upcoming birth.
Thank you very much. It's a girl, too.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Well,
she's going to be called.
I am just so excited about ACB Radio in general. Oh. I try to tune in as much as I possibly can.
Well, me too. And, you know, we will have had two children since ACB Radio started by the time this one pops out. And she's going to be called Nicola Jane.
Oh, that sounds so nice.
Beautiful name.
Yeah.
That is.
We like it.
Well, that's great. In fact, I was speaking with a friend of mine today, and we were speaking of you, Jonathan, and wondering when that baby was going to be born. So now we know, and I can pass the word on.
That's right. Yeah, you know, all little pink baby costumes welcome.
Oh, well, yeah. You never know what
put them
you
in the
might find.
Lovely.
Hey, well, you never know what might come your way.
And it's very kind of you to ring, and, you know, I really appreciate that. And do keep listening for at least another 3 years.
Well, I probably will listen for as long as I can. This is the first time I ever got brave enough to call in, but at least I've done it, and I'm just glad to have the opportunity to speak with you directly.
Well, you know, we have a lot more people who listen to shows like this than call in, so it's always a particular thrill when we hear from listeners that we haven't heard from before.
Well, thank you, Jonathan, and I look forward to hearing more of everybody else.
Thank you.
Especially you.
Well,
I'm a little partial here, I guess.
Wow.
But I always enjoy your shows.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh. She's gone. I'm blushing now, Dennis.
Yes, and one of the things that fascinated me from listening to the Sunday Smorgasbord a couple weeks ago was the your American friends, their take on New Zealand, because you and I have talked extensively about the other way around, but it was fascinating to hear their take on New Zealand, because that's a country that, until I got to know you, I really hadn't thought very much about.
I don't blame you for not thinking much about it, but yeah, it is good. It's so much fun because I've often been hit by difference in dialect, you know, in words that we use differently or whatever, and it's great to have a few Americans that I'm working closely with come to this country and have the problem big time. And it's worse for them because I deal with a lot of Americans, obviously, in my job, but they don't tend to deal with a lot of New Zealanders, so they've had quite an adjustment coming over here.
And one of the things that fascinated me about doing my show is your very interesting take on our political system from someone who, you know, was looking at it from afar. That's something that was very, very refreshing.
Now, here's something you will appreciate. In the United Kingdom, they have a number of watchdogs for the media. They have a separate one for advertising and another one for on-air content and all this sort of stuff. And the advertising watchdog in Britain has just banned a commercial because it insults George W. Have you heard about this?
No, I haven't.
No, well, it's a cartoon video. There's apparently a satirical series that's done in cartoon on one of the independent networks in Britain, and they've just released a video, sort of like a best of, in time for the Christmas season. And in the commercial for this video, it's got George W. unpacking a copy of this video, and he says, "Oh, good, you know, it's my favorite video," and he puts it in the toaster and everything blows up. And and this has been banned by the Advertising Standards Board, or whatever it's called in England, because it's insulting to George W. And the other one they've banned is one where David Beckham, who's, of course, a major soccer star married to posh spice Victoria Beckham, David Beckham turns to Victoria and says, "How do you spell DVD?" And they said that was insulting him as well.
So can they do satire over there at all? Because well, we have a show here called Saturday Night Live, and it's 90 minutes of people satiring... satirizing George Bush and people like that.
Well, there's no... Apparently, the people who make this show said, look, they're far worse to him on the program than in this ad, but because they're different watchdogs, you know, the broadcasting watchdog has no problem with them, but clearly the advertising one does.
Fascinating.
Yeah. And on that note, it's time for me to go.
Yes, it is.
And that's what Al Gore said, and look what happened to him. It's time for me to go.
Happy birthday to ACB Radio, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Dennis, and thank you for your very important contribution during that period.
I was pleased to do it.
Good on you. See you later. Right. Bye now. Bye. There we go. That's where we have to wrap it up, you know. That's the end of Blind Line for another week, and I have really enjoyed this program. And I, you know, Oscar Wilde said, if I could just quote Oscar Wilde, you know, there's only one thing worse than being talked about, and that is not being talked about. And, well, I guess that we're not going to suffer from not being talked about after a program like that. I'm sure that there'll be lots of comment. Goodbye.
How much is that doggy in the window? The one with the waggly tail. How much is that doggy in the window? I do hope that doggy is for sale. I must take a trip to California and leave my poor sweetheart alone. If he has a dog, he won't be lonesome, and the doggy will have a good home. How much is that doggy in the window? The one with the waggly tail. How much is that doggy in the window? I do hope that doggy is for sale. I read in the papers there are robbers. Oh, oh. With flashlights that shine in the dark. My love needs a doggy to protect him.